Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners. No prisoners. 1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of the Turner's Take newsletter. I am doing this from home today. We are out of the office. I am a broker at Daniels Trading, and a lot of the staff there are working remotely, along with a lot of the other brokerages and clearing firms. I work with self-directed traders. We have a great online trading platform. I also work with broker-assisted clients. We have a great option of hybrid. That's in between the two. If you don't get Turner's Take newsletter or want to get automatic updates when Turner's Take podcast is out, you can go ahead and sign up for it for free right on your cell phone. The number is 3377 and you just text the message Turner and it will take, they'll basically let you sign up for it. So let's get into just... The last time we talked was Thursday or Friday. Man, these past 3 days have been something else. The coronavirus has definitely led the taken a turn for the worse here and led the markets lower. Let's start off with the macro. I think the last time we talked, we were just talking about what needs to happen for the markets to settle down, for the selling and the crash to stop, right? So the number one thing that we were looking for was the Fed, the Treasuries. That was the big deal, right? That's the biggest market. That's the, you know, the engine of the economy. And bonds, if you've noticed, bonds have been coming down. We topped out. I'm going to bring my bond chart up real quick. But we topped out right around 190. We're back down to 170. Yields are, you know, we're under 1%. Now they're, you know, the 10-year, now they're coming back. Over 1%, we're not so concerned about negative interest rates all of a sudden. And that's a good thing. There was issues about financing, got companies meeting payroll. They needed access to commercial paper, all this stuff. So the Fed basically lowered rates down to zero in the overnight. They are just throwing money into the short-term interest rate markets to make sure there's liquidity there. And basically the Fed is... You know, turned on the fire hose and just said, hey, we will provide the liquidity where it isn't. And that's why the treasuries have come down. So that's step number one. You cannot have a recovery at all without that happening. All right. You got to remember, whether you like it or not, Wall Street and the financial institutions really, you know, they're the grease that makes this country run. The banking system is so much more than just what you kind of think of as, you know, Wall Street buying and trading stocks. I mean, actually, the biggest part of it really is the financing, the M&A side of it, the investment banking side and the corporate treasuries, the corporate bonds and the treasuries. It keeps the system running, keeps the banks running along with the Fed. And so when you take care of that, that's step number one. We're not going to get into the ins and outs of corporate debt, but from short term to long term. But just trust me on this one. If that's not working, nothing's working. It's the heart. It's basically the heart of the financial industry. All right. So then number two. So that's monetary policy. All right. That's monetary policy. It sounds like monetary policy. They're doing what they need to do. Number two is fiscal policy. Fiscal policy is a little bit more tricky because you got to get politicians involved, meaning the House and the Senate and the President all got to come together usually and set this fiscal policy, right? What's it going to be? Are we going to delay taxes, you know, from April 15th to June or July 15th? Are we going to cut the payroll tax? Is the government going to give everyone $2,000 a month to help pay bills? What's going to happen with the service industry? What if, you know, what if unemployment goes over 10% because of maybe even higher because all the jobs that'll be lost. Because the government is going to basically say, hey, we're shutting down. And if we're shutting down, they can do that. But but if they're going to do that, they know they have to come up with a fiscal policy that's going to allow that shutdown to happen, right? Without sending people into bankruptcy, without killing the service industry, you know, all these things and what they're going to do. Here's the thing. The Fed can act a lot faster because, you know, it's a board. They know what they need to do. They talk to the banks. They do it. Fiscal policy, always trickier. Politics are involved. Who gets what money, how much of it? The administration can kind of grease the wheels of this when they say, oh, we're in an national emergency. There are certain powers, you know, for the national emergency, or if there is some kind of crisis that they can enact, and it allows them more leeway in how they're going to dole out dollars and support and stimulus and stuff like that. But still, we're going to need something from Congress. When we see that, we're expecting a big, big stimulus plan or a fiscal plan to come in. And once that fiscal plan comes in, that's when, and not until, that's when you're going to see, hear more about basically probably the country just shutting down for a couple of weeks. You can't shut down the country without having that fiscal policy in place, right? So they know that, you know, they're shutting down schools and sports and this and curfews, and they're telling people to stay home. They really can't force it on everyone or make it, a 3-week shut-in until they come up with some kind of fiscal policy, right? And that's step number two, all right? The Fed took care of their business. The government, their elected officials are taking care of their business now. I mean, I'm recording this podcast on Wednesday afternoon. Maybe they're holding a press conference on it right now. And, you know, of course, if they do, then this podcast is coming out past that news. But whatever, that's what happens sometimes. Anyways, when that happens, the stock market, which has been basically repricing risk and assets for the next couple of months, because we know growth is really going to suffer in Q2. Now the markets will be saying, okay, we're going to lose all this growth. This is what the government's giving everyone just to keep everything afloat. See, what the government wants, what the Fed is doing on the corporate side is keeping liquidity there to let the businesses stay afloat and get through this tough time. What now the country has to do on the fiscal side is make sure everyone else can get through the next couple of weeks or couple of months while we basically go on lockdown, right? Because it's very difficult, you know, if you go bust, whether it be a person or a small business or a big business or a country, whatever it may be, it's hard to come back from that. But you can sit through rough times for a while, just kind of get by, and then when times get better, easier to accelerate. So the idea is, you just don't want to go bust. And what is the government going to do to be supportive for everyone for the next couple of weeks or month or so to make sure that happens? Because when you have that hard landing, it's tough to come back. All right, so that's what they're going to figure out. Once they do that and they announce this, stock market's going to see it. And then they're going to start saying, well, we're going to have a smoother bottom. What's going to be interesting is how the stock market reacts to when we finally get this big fiscal policy, and hopefully it comes out in a big way, all right? I'm not saying the stock market's going to start really rallying or go up higher, but what you could finally see is the stabilization of the stock market, and that's what we really want to see. We've seen it with the bonds. That's what we want to see with the stocks, but you need that fiscal policy. Energy. Energy has two things going on. One, you know, the manufacturing and the production side just stinks, right? The energy markets are diving on that. And then Saudi Arabia, to make matters worse, is just pumping record amount of crude. And they're using this opportunity to basically run all the high-cost providers out of business. And they're sending a message to their fellow OPEC members and Russia, basically reminding them who's the big boy on the street. And the next time they want to cut production in OPEC, everyone get in line. Otherwise, I'm doing this next time. And they're, because OPEC is the low-cost provider out of all of them, no matter how far crude oil comes down, they're not going to be as hurt as much as everyone else. And it sounds crazy, but that's what's going on in crude. I mean, Saudi Arabia said they're going to increase exports by 40%. Increase exports by 40%. Slashing prices of crude oil. Just sticking it to Russia and the rest of the OPEC who aren't following them. the rest of the world and the producers here in the United States, right? So that is just an unfortunate occurrence. I think crude, April crude got down to $20.06. We almost hit 20 even. It got really close there right at the end. And now we've backed off, but we're in the low 20s. The RBOB is in the 60s. Gasoline's in the 60s. We're almost $2 around Christmas. Excuse me. A little dry throat there. You know, I'll take a sip of water. We're gonna see at 66% lower in RBOB. And you gotta think, you know, no one's driving. I know I'm not. I'm not taking the train into the city. You know, it's Wednesday. Since this weekend, I've been in the car once. I went to the grocery store yesterday. That's it. I mean, I haven't been. My wife hasn't gotten in the car. Oh, she went. She's at her office is in the small little village that's about a mile away from her house. She went to her office to print out some stuff for the kids for their schoolwork. Or their printers are a heck of a lot better than mine. So she did that, and that was it. I mean, that's the amount of driving we've done in 5 days. So the energy. Situation is not great, but I'll say this, I guess crude can only go down 20 more dollars. I mean, we can't go below zero, and odds are, if you want to ask me what really is the low, like, I don't think we're getting there, but where crude oil, where it just probably will not go below, is 10 bucks. Now, I'm not saying we're going there. We could be in the high teens. I wouldn't be shocked on that, but just keep in mind, Saudi Arabia cost of production is about $10 a barrel. Are we going to 10? No. I don't think so. But can we be in the high teens? I wouldn't be shocked. But at some point, that's a buy. There's got to be demand for crude oil at some point. Same with RBOB and heating oil here. We can always go lower over the short term. But, you know, we're not going to zero on some of these things. What we will start seeing is, and what I'm hearing about is refineries scaling back, rigs shutting down. And what's going to happen here is probably what the Saudis want is less supply. And we're going to start hearing about that. And that should be, unfortunately, it's not good for the U.S. workers and people in that industry, but it will put a stop to the, or put a floor in for the crude oil market. And with that said, and I don't think we see that either, we need that fiscal policy. So that fiscal policy kind of goes hand in hand with the stock market and the energy market. We really need to see them come through. Once that comes through and treasuries aren't coming down because the Fed's providing that liquidity, we can start to see things bottom out here. All right, I'm not saying we're going higher, but we can start to see things bottom out, and it'll be kind of like a big consolidation zone. That's what we're looking for. That's the next step. Need that fiscal policy. Moving on from energies to corn and grain, and this is deliberate on the segue between the two. With energy down this low, ethanol is getting killed. I think gasoline is 30 cents cheaper than ethanol, so ethanol is still screaming to the bottom. The margins on ethanol, it make no sense in the industry right now. It to produce. You're just going to see ethanol plants shut down. It's already start to happen. They're pulling their bids. Basis in the country is just coming down, which for those of you who are in the ag markets, the cash prices are coming down. And here's what's happening, too. You know, the elevators are starting to pull their bids, too, because what happens is the elevators are selling corn to the ethanol plants, right? So the elevator will come in and off and say, hey, we're buying X amount of corn to the farmer, you know, at price. Let's say it's, you know, 10 under futures, for example. And then let's say they'll eventually take that and they'll sell it to the ethanol plant for, let's say, you know, 5 under. You know, I'm just using round numbers here. It's not exactly how it works, you know, in terms of the spread and all that. But that's what they do. And the ethanol plant doesn't have to go out to all the farmers and source corn. They just come to the elevator. They pay a little bit of a premium for that. The elevator is the one that, you know, stores and deals with the farmers, and, you know, and the farmers can all come to the elevator and sell. And what the elevator is doing is buying from one, selling to the other, doing all the processing, handling all the money, making the spread between the two. All right, they're a middleman. The thing is, they don't want to buy from farmers right now. I'm sorry to say, and it's because they don't have a buyer. You know, either they're, you know, when the elevator has corn, they're going to be selling it to, let's say, for feed, Their corn either gets sold for feed, for export, or for ethanol. And if it's going for export, it's going for feed in another country, right? So it's really feed and it's ethanol for the most part. There's other usage, but those are the two biggest by far, right? And that's not happening. So corn is acting a lot worse than soybeans and wheat. Soybeans were higher for most of the day today until the end of the day, where we really got some heavy selling pressure and soybeans couldn't keep up anymore. The reason why soybeans were acting better is because U.S. soybeans are the cheapest in the world right now, cheaper than even South America. So it's hard to beat down soybeans unless the market's completely going crazy to the downside overall. Because now we have some natural buying support from the rest of the world, right? So soybeans are hanging in there. We could definitely go lower, especially if South America starts to lower their prices, but that's where we are. Wheat, we heard rumors today of China trying to buy wheat, and I believe it was the high-protein wheat, so it was probably the Kansas City wheat, or it could have been spring wheat. I heard it late on the wire. Wouldn't have been Chicago wheat, but it would have been the higher-protein wheat. China's in the market for that. Didn't see any confirmations for it, but the word was going around. So there must be, if anything, they're sniffing at it on the, you know, with the big exporters, probably out of the Pacific Northwest. So that was good for the wheat market. Corn at one point was down 10, 11 cents, and it has everything to do with the ethanol, situation. Also, I was reading some newsletters and some other analysts, and they were saying how some of the bigger funds that are long crude down here, you know, they're buying crude, kind of taking a stab at it and just kind of hedge their bets a little bit. They're selling some corn against it. I kind of get that. You know, because there is an energy component to corn. I don't know how big that trade really is, but it's definitely interesting. You hear it enough times from enough sources, you know, there could be some truth to that. So I thought that was interesting, but you know, another reason maybe corn was coming down a little bit. So that's where we are on the grains. Again, when are we going to bottom? We're making new lows, contract lows in corn. Next support comes in at 320, then finally at $3 for corn. Don't see it going much lower than that. In the meantime, though, and then with soybeans, we still think $8 is support for soybeans. But we'll see. It's very difficult to tell. No one wants to jump in and try to catch a falling knife. And here's the thing and I'll say this again, I've said this a couple of times, when you have markets like this, or any kind of time you're trading, odds are you don't catch the bottom or the top, right? So you got to accept the fact you're either going to be early or you're going to be late. And if we have a range-bound market, you're early, you're late, not really a big deal. You can be early, it bounces off support, maybe goes to the next support level, eventually comes back up. In a market like that, it's not as big as a deal. In this kind of situation, in this market, you'd rather be late. You'd much rather have the market start going in your favor and you miss it a little bit and you got to catch up and buy on the upswing, rather than buy it and then have it go down much farther than you ever thought you would. Another thing I talk to clients about is I don't love averaging down, especially in leverage markets. If you want to do it with an option where the risk is known, that's fine. With the futures market, if you like it, I wouldn't average down. You just hold on to it. When the markets go against you like this, it's either stick with it or liquidate. I am not a fan of doubling up on anything. And even to the downside, for those of you who are short, especially those that are short because of hedges and sales that you made for this year's crop or next year's crop, I don't see the point in selling now. I mean, prices are so low, even though we could go lower. It just seems, you just never know when they'll turn around. And when they do turn around, they can sometimes turn around in a big, big way. So I like trading small if you're going to trade. Again, just keep it small. Just keep it small. There's no reason to get big down here. And I'm not saying these aren't good prices. It's just that who's to say crude can't go down another $5? Who's to say the S&P can't go down another 5 or 10%, right? So keep those in mind. Finally, I'm going to get into the livestock. This was probably the craziest day I've ever seen in the fed cattle, in the live cattle market. At one point, We had expanded limits, and we were limit up in the front months, and then I think we finished limit down. There's a 9-point swing. Never seen anything like it in the cattle market. That was definitely one for the books. And here's the thing, it was strong. I mean, cattle was strong in the morning because beef prices are so strong. The cutouts and the retail. What happened was, is with the coronavirus, everyone went to the supermarket and cleared out all animal protein products. So let's just chicken, pork, and beef, and all the toilet paper and the paper towels. Right? I mean, I was in the supermarket yesterday. I went quickly to two of my local ones. One was completely cleared out of all those products I just said. The other one was still out of all the paper goods, but their protein, animal protein, beef, chicken, pork, were all back and fully stocked. And the first grocery store I went to, which was sold out yesterday, I heard, saw a text from a friend saying they were all back in stock. And I'm not surprised because anyone who listens to this podcast or reads the newsletter knows we've been talking about the, first of all, pork. We've got more pork product in this country than we know what to do with. We have record levels of pork in frozen storage. I mean, in cold storage, right? I mean, it is, we can, I was telling my wife was a little concerned, you know, about the groceries. And I said to her, listen, you understand. We have so much pork in this country. Like, we can have, you know, barbecue, we can do the ribs, we can do a shoulder, we can have tenderloin, we'll do pork chops. I mean, there's more pork. They just got to get it from point A to point B here. There's plenty. You know, and beef and chicken aren't in shortages either. So I think, you know, going forward, but what happened was we saw this huge price because basically everyone cleared out the retailers. Then all the retailers had put orders in. And we saw some huge, huge jumps in price. And that's why cattle was limit up, because we're seeing basically all the retailers having to restock, which they can. And we were limit up, and then towards the end of the day, it came off. And when everything was just going to hell in a handbasket, and crude was testing 20, and you know, the S&P was just getting crushed. It was ugly there for a while, and it all came back down. And you know, even though this was a story, a bullish story for livestock, sometimes you just cannot fight the macro markets and the selling. Just the waves of selling infects everything in the market. So I'm not that bearish on pork and beef for cattle and hogs. I'm really not. I just think they had a tough time getting out of the way of just markets that are much bigger than them that were selling much harder. I wouldn't be surprised to see tomorrow pork and cattle come back. I think cattle, I don't see the point of why fat cattle should go below 80 right now. I really don't. You know, the demand for food is not going away. I mean, if I might not have a hamburger at, you know, my local high school, you know, basketball game, but I'll still have one at home. You know, we'll just see demand shift from restaurants and going out to going home. We're going to be eating at home a lot more, right? No more, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, like, there's no more Sunday brunch, you know, after church. It's just, it's not good. But anyways, I don't want to be a downer here. But, like, you know, you're going to be eating at home. That's just the way it is. So, and if it weren't for the ethanol and the energy component killing corn right now, I don't think corn would be in the situation it is right now either. But I got to say, for the major commodity markets, I think the livestock bottom first. I really do. And I think wheat and soybeans hold up better than corn here. So that's our thoughts. My idea, as all, you know, until I say differently, there's no reason to trade heavy in this market. If you're a producer, I'm not selling heavy. I mean, I don't see the point of hedging, you know, if you're growing corn or soybeans or wheat down here. I mean, why chase this? I don't see it at all. And then if you do need to buy feed because you're an end user, these are pretty good prices. If you are, you do need to buy energy. I mean, how much lower are we going to go? There's nothing wrong. I think this is a good time to do it. And for everyone else on the spec side or the investment side, you know, I understand having little positions here and there, but I can't. I mean, this is not the time to go full on into anything. There's just too much uncertainty. I'm optimistic, but I also know that one of two things have to happen. I'm going to leave you with two things. Number one, going forward, one of two things have to happen. either we really shut down the country, like for a month, right? And the problem is we're really going to hurt the economy, which means then the Fed and the government and the stimulus from the fiscal and the monetary have to come in big time. Basically support everyone for a month if we're going to do that, right? And that will basically really flatten the curve. We won't have the virus spread. And it'll be a lot of short-term pain. But if the government backstops that, then we get through it, right? That's option number one. Option number two is to kind of do this limited social distance and, like, not completely shut down the country, but, you know, kind of just go down to bare bones the much that you can. I don't know. There's going to be some, you know, and maybe this goes into late spring, early summer, right? And then things start to get back to normal. I don't have a crystal ball. I'm just saying, like, if just based on how things are going, see what other countries did, what options the governments are trying to weigh, just seeing what's going on with business here. I'm using Chicago and the suburbs and all the people I know who have jobs in the city and are in different industries, from medical to finance, commodities, you know, big corporations. That's just the way it seems like it's going for the people I talk to. But, I don't know. Hopefully a lot better days are going to be here sooner rather than later. Finally, in my newsletter, if you're following along with the newsletter, at the end of it, I am saying what I'm doing every day with my family. If you want to get those, not just this analysis, but those updates, just text on your phone, 333-777-3777 with the message Turner. We're homeschooling right now. I got four kids. Three of them are elementary school age. And right now, the way it's working is my wife is schooling them in the morning. When the markets close, I get them. And in between, let's say lunch, and when they're turned over to me, we kind of let them loose outside. We're playing games. We're watching movies. We're spending a lot of time kind of just right either in the house or around the house. I'm assuming everyone else is doing that. So, you know, if you want to follow along with what we're doing, or if you want to join the newsletter and eventually, and hey, let me know what you're doing, what you're watching, what games you're playing, what you're doing, you know, in the e-learning and homeschooling for the next month or two, go ahead and follow along and reply back when you got an idea or comment. I think we're going to be doing this for a while, at least for a few weeks, if not a few months, hopefully not a few months, but you never know. So that is the podcast for the day. I hope everyone's staying safe out there. If you want to work with me, whether it's on the spec or the hedge side, feel free to give me a call. I am working from home. My office cell is 312-651-4621. 312-651-4621. My office phone is 312-706-7610. You can call that. Just rolls over to my office cell. But, yeah, feel free to give me a call anytime. Happy to talk about what we're doing, what we're looking at, and where we think things are going. All right, have a good day, everyone. Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, feel free to send it, and always send it to someone else. And always, if you really like it, we always love a review on iTunes. Hope everyone's doing well, and I'll talk to you soon.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.